clear. Oh, it comes off Hughes. Away by Berra. Here's McHugh!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast with Jay and Buster, both in sunnier climates. I'm joined by Nick McFeet to go over yesterday's 1-1 draw with St Mirren. We'll look ahead to next weekend's game against St Johnstone and we'll see what else takes our fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. Nick, first time on, welcome.
Cheers for having me on, mate. Appreciate that.
Well, it was meant to be three of us. This will be a bit of a more informal conversation, I guess. But yesterday's game against St Mirren, again, another one that was played at a kind of pedestrian pace, despite the fact that we're obviously fighting for their lives. We controlled the game, I think. We eventually got ahead through David Turnbull's goal, only to be pegged back in the 93rd minute. I guess I went along not really actually caring that much, to be honest with you. I was just looking forward to seeing more of David Turnbull, to be perfectly honest with you. But to lose a game or to draw a game in those circumstances, it's always disappointing, isn't it?
I thought we started the game really, really well. And they actually brought a good crowd as well. So it actually brought a bit of an edge to the game. But the second half we sort of slacked off and it did sort of go at a bit of a pedestrian pace. But it was disappointing, especially with the chances that we had sort of at the start of the game. Then towards the end, we freed as well. We should have probably had the game wrapped up. So it's disappointing to drop 2 points again, similar to the sort of Aki's game recently. But we're only playing for seventh after all, so it's not too much to get wound up about, is it?
Nah, that's it. And do you feel that the battle for seventh, I guess it's got a financial edge. In fact, it's most certainly got a financial edge for the club. But for a supporter, that's quite difficult to build yourself up for these games, isn't it?
I know, because in the build-up to the game, when the social media teams, they'll put out these taglines, the race for seventh is still on and all that, like try to convince you to come to the game. I think they should just start saying, this is potentially maybe the last game you're going to see David Turnbull and Claret and Amber, so come to the game. And you'll probably get about an extra 3,000 people maybe turning up.
And that brings us on nicely. We've kind of got a segment of the podcast reserved for just loving David Turnbull, which I think we can all do, and we all do on a daily basis. It was one of his quieter afternoons yesterday, but another goal, that takes him to 4 goals in his last 3 games. He's just immense, isn't he?
It's getting ridiculous now. I was just looking on the SPFL top scorers thing there, and it's because that gives you the breakdown of assists as well, and it works out that he's got a goal or assist every 1.5 games. For somebody 19 years old that's only come into the team in, what, October? Something like that. It's mental. But his goal, I was sitting quite far towards the south stand and the east stand yesterday, like towards the left-hand side, looking onto the pitch. And I don't know, I thought the goal kind of looked quite scrappy at first. And when I watched it in the highlights, the technique is absolutely ridiculous. Again, it's similar to the one that he scored against Aberdeen earlier on in the season, the 3-0 one. This one was on his left foot. Sort of comes up and quite short. It's on his left foot as well. It's the one against Dundee last week as well was on his left foot, and it's mental. His technique's absolutely crazy. But as I say, that's a goal or assist every 1.5 games, and for somebody 19 years old, it's mental, really, considering he's only just come in the team in October.
It does have this ability to kind of just lift the place as well. I do believe that there's quite a lot of people, particularly with nothing to play for just now, that are going along with the sole purpose of watching David Turnbull.
Oh, definitely. That's really what I'm going for, to be honest with you, because I'm worried the more, obviously it's great to see him playing so well, but the more goals that he scores and the more influence that he's having on games, you just worry that these are the last couple of times that you're going to see him turning out for us. So that is really what I'm going for, to be honest with you. I'm going to go to St Johnstone next week and obviously go to Livingston last game of the season, just thinking that it's potentially going to be the last time that you're going to see him kick a ball for us.
Yeah, I guess there's always that fear, and I think it is quite important just to enjoy him while we have him. It'll be interesting as well to see how firm we can stand in terms of a transfer fee. For me, and I've mentioned this time and time again, that Scott McKenna is the biggest myth in Scottish football. If Scott McKenna is worth £9 million, I'm possibly worth about six. I don't know whether, obviously you can't just name your price, but in a world where you've got the likes of Ryan Fraser, for instance, going down south, making a big impact in the Bournemouth team. I watched him yesterday against Spurs, and he's excellent. He doesn't just hold his own, he's one of their best players. I wonder whether they're maybe looking at the Premiership now and thinking, there's guys there that will be able to come in and not only just be a squad player or a filler player, they'll actually be able to play a key role in our team. For me, David Turnbull could go and do a job right up to the top six in the EPL. I honestly believe he's that good.
Well, that's what, it's funny that you mentioned Ryan Fraser, because I was saying to my mates, like, I could actually imagine him playing for someone in the Premier League, like a team that sort of tries to play half decent football, like even at this stage, you know. I can imagine him playing for a team like Bournemouth or something like that, then progressing his way up, the same way as Ryan Fraser will probably do. But in terms of evaluation, I think Robinson mentioned the John McGinn transfer recently, hadn't he? As if like that's sort of like a benchmark to be looking at, we try to get a transfer fee, but that should be the bare minimum, especially with 2 years left in his deal. Should be looking for at least, honestly, about £3 million at least.
And that kind of takes us on to the whole contract scenario. We'll talk about Jake Hasty's move, and this, I can absolutely promise, will be the last time that Jake Hasty's pre-contract agreement is ever mentioned in this podcast, because we've been talking about it for about 6 weeks now, and I'm bored shitless of mentioning it, to be perfectly honest. But getting David Turnbull tied down to a long-term deal, you've got to tip your hat to everyone involved in that process, because while it took a while to filter him into the team and to allow him to show what he was capable of, having these extra couple of years puts us in a very good bargaining position.
I think you've got to, obviously the club have done really well with that, but I think you need to actually tip your hat to the player as well, because, I mean, how easy would it have been for him to, I mean, the rumours of the clubs that were coming in for him, was it Swansea or something like that, they could have easily offered a more lucrative deal than what Hasty's probably getting at Rangers. So you need to, obviously, I think Turnbull's family and that were involved, the club had said, and sort of putting his head in the right place and sort of convincing him that here was the right place to stay. And it's got to benefit him massively. When you compare it to the Hasty situation, I mean, nobody knows really what's got to happen with Hasty when he goes to Rangers, but, I mean, people are going to say, even Rangers fans are saying themselves, it's hard to see him getting in the team. But what Turnbull's done is, I mean, it's got to work for him massively going forward.
Yeah, that's it. I still think games like yesterday maybe demonstrate he will have quieter afternoons. He's not always going to be this Ballon d'Or type player, which in spells he actually is definitely the best player in the world for me. But he is going to have quieter afternoons. Yes, he obviously got his goal yesterday and he took it magnificently well. But extra game time and being able to learn and possibly being played in a role where you're allowed to dictate and allowed to try something a bit different, that's going to benefit David Turnbull for me. I think he's clearly seen that he does have a bit of development and a bit of learning to do. And I think for Pat's possibly the ideal place to do that.
Well, that's what, obviously just going on to why we're talking about how good a season and stuff like that he's had. He's 19 years old and he's actually dictating the pace of games, like week in, week out for us, especially against in the bottom six sort of games. But for somebody for that young to have that football brain to actually be able to dictate the pace of games continuously, it's crazy, really.
Possibly one of the negatives of yesterday's game, Nick, was a bit of poor decision making from Elliot Freer that effectively led to their equalising goal. There was better options in the box. For me, Freer changed the game when he came on. I thought he was very good. His final ball isn't always there. I think given his contract situation as well, he's perhaps trying a bit too hard. He's determined to impress, whether that be turning a new contract at Fir Park or to move a to win a move elsewhere. It was a bad judgment call he made. He should have cut the ball back. Instead, he trickled the shot in at the goalkeeper's hands. They break away. Elliot Freer doesn't actually manage to make the tackle. Cara McHugh eventually stepped in, made the foul. The free kick leads to a goal. It would be easy to place all the blame at Elliot Freer's door, but by the same token, you still got to defend the ball into the box, don't you? In kind of second phase of play, when the ball breaks out to the edge, we've not cleared the lines and we're punished for it.
I mean, I felt sorry for Freer a wee bit, because I actually said at the time, I think Cadden sort of bombs on to try and give an option in the box, but I thought at the time Cadden should have ran in the outside of him, because I think he just made it more awkward for him. I think he made it more congested in the box, and I don't know, as you say, his decision making's a bit off, but I think if Cadden had sort of ran in the outside, they might have drew a defender away, maybe gave him a clearer shot at goal. But that said, the shot was like a pass back anyway. But I mean, I think all Motherwell fans are sort of, they sort of agree in the fact that he's a confidence player, so I do worry about him with that miss. With he's sort of maybe humming and hawing whether he's signing a new contract or not, and with Robinson's comments sort of name dropping him in an interview about the chance and stuff like that after the game, I worry about him whether that's maybe just got to sort of tip him over the edge and he might actually refuse to sign that contract now and leave. But with the defending the goal, I didn't actually see, I just seen the sort of finish at the time, but that's how I feel quite bad putting all the blame in Freer as well, because we had quite a lot of chances to defend it before they've actually eventually had the shot at goal. So I've got sympathy for Freer as well, but I mean, it's pure defending at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's a disappointing one. I think it's easy to hang someone out to dry, and I think that's the danger with doing these post-match interviews when the result's still raw and it's still not to quite the extent of the Martin McGee one at Ibrox a couple of years ago, but I don't think you've had time to dissect the game and kind of consider the bigger picture. For me, it's always quite poor hanging an individual out to dry. Mm. You're meant to win as a team and lose as a team, and I guess in this scenario, draw as a team. So it was a poor judgment call, but for me, I think Elliot Freer is just desperate to impress, and he's only getting sporadic appearances here and there as well, so it's very difficult for him to make an impact. He was played in the opposite side against Aki's the other week, and for me, that's a bit of a fruitless endeavour. He's not able to impact the game in the way that he can. I'm not sure about him at times. I think that if he doesn't beat his man the first time, then he becomes a bit timid and a bit, I don't want to say heartless, but he loses a lot of confidence and he doesn't try the things that he will do if he beats the man the first time. It becomes really, really effective. I think at times he's also a bit of a scapegoat for our fans as well, which is a bit unfair as well. In terms of wingers are going to be inconsistent, we look at Aribe yesterday. I was impressed by Aribe's work rate and his determination to continue going. But a lot of things didn't come off for him yesterday. It was just a disappointing afternoon for him. Wingers are going to be inconsistent, particularly at our level.
Oh, definitely. I think with Freer and Aribe, I think it needs to be one or the other, because everyone knows what Freer's qualities are. He gets to the byline and he's got a great delivery when he does that. And you're not really got to get that way. I'm playing in the right and cutting inside. He's always got to want to come in his left foot. With Aribe as well, if it was Aribe that was on the right and Freer on the left, like, it takes a lot away from Aribe's game as well, because his game's really based on getting one-on-one with a defender, skinning him basically, then sort of coming inside on his right foot. So I think it needs to be one or the other. And there's talk he's trying to keep Aribe for next season, and I think that's what Freer must be looking at, because if we keep Aribe for next season, I mean, I think Aribe's obviously got to be the first choice in the left-hand side, so there's got to be an off season of potentially trying to impress the manager and coming off the bench again, and I don't really think that's what he wants at all.
Yeah, I think a regular run of games, and would you have that much faith given that post-match interview, that your manager's really that confident in your abilities? Because to sideline someone for the amount of time that Elliot Freer has been, and then to kind of almost single him out in a post-match interview, it's not great, is it?
I know, it's a shame as well, because like, he had a really good game against Aki's before the winter break. We went into that winter break and it felt like every single interview that Robinson done over the winter break in that training camp was just talking up Freer. Then the next minute, we play Ross County in the cup or whatever, Hasty comes on and scores, and Hasty just completely wipes him out of the team by coming in and scoring 7 goals or whatever it was. So, I don't know, I think he has been unlucky, that Hasty situation. It's probably unlucky for him, but I don't know. I think it's hard to see him being at the club beyond the end of this season, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and one person that we know certainly wouldn't be at the club next season now is Jake Hasty. And I've already alluded to this. This will be the last we discuss this matter, because we've basically covered it and it's been done to death over the last 5 or 6 weeks. It wasn't a very well-kept secret that he'd signed a deal with Rangers. He now has signed a deal. Is this one that we just now move on from? I think we've all kind of... We have done it to death, and it's been discussed to the then degree. Some of this social media stuff is bollocks, to be fair. This is a young guy that's made a move. He's had other options. He's decided what he believes is best for him. To dig a Facebook post when he was quite weird, to be perfectly honest. But the decision's made. He's not playing for our team anymore. Stephen Robinson's basically kiboshed him in the last 3 or 4 weeks. He was good when he burst onto the scene. They had a bit of inconsistency. And now he's left. Do we just move on now?
That thing with the digging up the Facebook post, I mean, that's how I actually worry about him, because there will be sections of the Rangers fans that I will absolutely hate that, by the way. I know majority of them will try and... Well, majority of them probably won't really care because he was young, but if he has had any bad games, there'll be a section of that support that will just completely go to that and bring up the fact that he's a Celtic fan. And that's how I worry about when these players make these moves like this. But, I mean, I think the fact that it looks as if the majority of Motherwell supporters have moved on already, and I think that sort of highlights that he hasn't really got to be particularly a big loss to us. I mean, obviously it would have been great to keep him, but I don't think there's been that much. I mean, nobody's really been crying about it or anything like that. Obviously, with Turnbull being that good, it's sort of overshadowed it, but I mean, if we can keep Cadden for another year or two, I mean, I think people would be more than happy with that.
Yeah, that's it. And I actually had a discussion with someone yesterday after the game that what this has made me realise, as much as we sing the praises of David Turnbull on a weekly basis, Jake Hasty for me wasn't even the second best young player at in the team. Like, Alan Campbell's flying completely under the radar just now. And Alan Campbell is a sublime talent. Like, the amount of work that Alan Campbell puts into 90 minutes of football is incredible. He's an absolute unsung hero.
Oh, he doesn't do the fashionable side of the game. I thought at times, even when Hasty was coming into the team and scoring, I actually thought Turnbull was going under the radar, because Hasty was obviously scoring these ridiculously good goals and it was him that was pulling in the headlines. But I actually thought at times Turnbull was in his shadow in the media anyway. Definitely not with Motherwell fans, but in the media. And that just, obviously, if that was happening with Turnbull, then Campbell was going even further under the radar. But as you said, Campbell's a huge asset to us. He does all the dirty work and he gives a platform really for players like Turnbull to sort of dictate the game and do the magic up the top end of the pitch.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Alan Campbell, I think the Morris Ross conversation I had last week, and we've got Morris coming on the podcast in the next couple of weeks, but he was saying he believes that Campbell's a poster boy at the academy because, excuse me, his work rate and his dedication to being a footballer is just second to none. The hours he puts in quite often turning up at the club before anybody's actually in, wanting to go to the gym and stuff like that. Yeah, but he refers to that as the free stuff, the stuff that it's up to you whether you want to be the best you can. Nobody's going to be able to force you to go in at that time in the morning and devote your time to your fitness and building up your physicality for the game. He's determined to do that. And for me, there's a wee bit of haste that just going on social media, and which is a possibly a dangerous game to play, but you saw him breaking into the team and then the pictures of the new car come up and everything else, and you think, will he be able to deal with the attention and the goldfish bowl that is playing with one of the big two in Scotland? It's going to be very difficult for him.
Oh, no, definitely. It's a completely different ball game playing for one of the old firm. But it's just, honestly, it's got to come down to game time for me. They've signed Jordan Jones. They're talking about getting Kent back. If they're looking to sign Greg Stewart, he played his best football coming in for the right-hand side at Kilmarnock. So, where has he got to get game time?
It's hard to see, and I think Hastie's one that we all can see that it's got plenty of potential and the ability to go far in the game. But just like a David Turnbull or an Alan Campbell or a Chris Cadden, that's only built up by actually playing football.
Exactly. Well, you just need to look at the decision Turnbull's made. It's got to work out absolutely perfectly for him. I mean, as I said, earlier, I don't know if you laid that bit out or no, but he could have easily got a more lucrative deal than Hasty in that contract with us. But now that he's signed, it looks as if he could easily go up. The next move that he makes for Motherwell could be one of the top leagues in Europe easily. He could completely bypass leagues like the Championship in England and go straight into the top division now. So it just shows you the benefit of actually sticking it out at your club where you've made it and getting 50 to 100 games under your belt.
Yeah, and that's again quite a good link into what I was going to talk about next, and the fact that Jake Carroll has joined the club, becoming our third summer signing. Quite often it's talked about that Motherwell's a platform and getting the chance to play on the telly 5 or 6 times a season, that's a good place to showcase your talent and demonstrate the qualities you've got. David Turnbull's obviously decided to stay, and I guess he'll be getting held up as a benchmark as well, won't he? That, look at this guy, he's doing very well in the first team, he's a top scorer, top assist maker, and he wants to be here, he wants to remain at the club. Obviously, 4 or 5 young guys have followed suit and signing on with the club as well. So it's a positive sign, and you kind of think that the way that we're going about our business seems to be quite positive in that regard. Yes, we don't expect you to be tied down to some sort of Jim McLean contract where you're here for 12 years with the option of 10 more. But what we'll do is we'll give you a platform to demonstrate your qualities, and if you're good enough, by all means, move on, make us a profit, and it's happy days for both parties.
Well, even out with Turnbull, you look at the players in the past, there's a host of players that we've had that we've actually gave a platform for them to play, and they've went on to, I wouldn't say better things, but they went on to obviously bigger contracts anyway. You look at Marvin Johnson, Louis Moult, Ben Hennigan, can't really think of him there, so off the top of my head, don't I? But if you look at when players are signing, if the manager sort of details all that stuff to them when they're thinking about what club to come to, then that will surely be at the forefront of their mind, especially with players like Paul Worth and Gallagher, because I don't imagine they wouldn't have had any other clubs to choose from, especially Paul Worth, his record in the Scottish Championship this season, and obviously Gallagher being one of the standout centre-backs in the top division. But if we're a club that can showcase talents better than other clubs that are coming in for these players, then players have got to think twice about signing for us over somebody else.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. And I think that the signing policy was quite heavily criticised last summer. I think Stephen Robinson's held his hands up as well and said that he got things wrong. That's now three signings already confirmed. Jake Carroll, the reviews aren't glowing from the Cambridge fans or the Partick Thistle fans, who albeit saw him, I think it's something like six or seven appearances he made for Partick Thistle on loan between 2014 and 2015. So possibly not. You can't take anything as gospel in the likes of Twitter and stuff like that. And when a guy's leaving, he automatically becomes a worse player, I think, in many instances. That's certainly been the case with Hasty, where a lot of people have really started to badmouth his abilities when 2 months ago they were worshipping the guy. So football fans are fickle, and I'm absolutely no exception to that as well, it must be said. But the three deals done before the end of the season is a bit of a statement of intent.
I'll just quickly on the Jake Carroll, the social media stuff, I mean, I wouldn't advise anyone to buy into that, because we've seen it recently with Aldred, and you know, I don't even really need to go into detail about how good that guy's been for us, but Maine as well, I'm sure Maine was getting absolute pelters. I mean, I know he's not been particularly good this season, but last season when I initially joined us, I'm sure he was getting absolute pelters off Portsmouth fans on social media, and he came in and took us to a Scottish Cup final, basically. So I wouldn't buy into that at all, any of that stuff. But going into the signings as well, I mean, I actually was saying to one of my mates yesterday, if all the people that we'd actually offered contracts to, if they'd actually signed, I don't even know if we'd actually need to try and sign any more players, to be honest with you. Maybe a striker and that'd be it. Everyone that we've sort of offered contracts to, like, you think about Gordon, Cadden, who else? Freer. We'd obviously have a decent amount of wingers. Then I think it'd probably only really be a striker that we'd be short of, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I tend to go with that. That's a difficult place to fill, though, isn't it? It looks now that Curtis Mayne's definitely on his way out of the James Scott, again, I think it's a thankless task playing up front by yourself as well. I would have loved to see him get a goal yesterday, because now to hit a bit of a goal scoring for him going into the end of the season, and you would be back for pre-season really confident that you could do the same at the start of the following season. But the goals have been hard to come for in terms of Scott. Mayne's sidelined. Connor Salmon is certainly going somewhere, God knows where, because Hearts clearly don't want him back.
I'm saying I want Salmon back. I love him. He's a good patter.
I think what he's brought is a couple of goals in the Betfred group stages and then a funny photo when we were in Spain.
There's quite a good photo as well, is it, during the week there. Somehow his two arms raised up to the sky when he's in a shot. It does not look like the technique a professional footballer should be doing.
He's an absolute unit. See, yesterday I was watching the warm-up at half-time and he dwarfs Curtis Mayne, who isn't he small either.
I know.
I would quite like to see him going toe-to-toe with like someone like Brock Lesnar or something like that, because I honestly believe that Connor Salmon's possibly right up there with the top brass in UFC.
Maybe that's his next move, ICW or something like that.
It's definitely something that I'm going to go on to when I've had a few pints in me the next time. Put the suggestion out there, because he's not really cutting it as a footballer, so he definitely needs to be looking at his next career move. But it's amazing, though, when you think about it, guys that can basically just kick a boot. He's got a contract with Hearts. He spent the second half of last season in loan at Thistle, where he got a pizza. He then spends a whole year training with us. Let's face it, he's played, about seven times. Once as a winger at Pittodrie, which was the most ridiculous.
Oh my God.
That was basically one of the complete low points of a terrible run of form in the first half of the season. The second half of the season, we've been so much better, so he's not really getting a look in, although sometimes we bring him on for the last 5 minutes, seemingly just as a laugh. It must be amazing just to continue to just exist. He's not really got much of an obligation to fulfill, has he? Just as long as he's turning up every day, I guess that's your money in the bank.
My favourite Connor Salmon moment is the Aki's away game just before the split when Aldridge scored twice and the ball came in and they definitely tried to control it like on the turn and it ended up looking like a shot and it would honestly have been one of the best Millwall goals I've ever seen, I think. I think it just landed into the keeper's arms out of nowhere and I think they just kind of looked at each other like, what was that? There is no way he meant that, because if that went in, that would have just been a ridiculous goal.
He's managed to exist well. By all accounts, he's a really good guy and a good guy to have about the place. Mm. But it's just no work to it. But I struggle to see kind of where Connor Salmon fits in football. He's just I don't think anyone's particularly needing a Connor Salmon. So it's a bit of a dilemma for poor Connor when the season finishes. He's going to go, fuck, I'm going to need to work out what I'm going to do with my life here.
But is he out of contract at Hearts then, at the end of this season?
I don't know, but I think Hearts have basically stated we don't want very much to do with this guy. He is a pure Levine signing, though. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. Main was linked with Hearts, and Craig Levine loves big bully boy centre forwards. So
I would be amazed if Curtis Main left Motherwell and actually went to like a team that's better than us. So we've been linked with Aberdeen and Hearts. I'll be like, how is that even possible?
I know, but if you're not watching a guy every week, I guess you can make a really good showreel for Curtis Main. He scored some very good goals and his link-up play. And I actually think that at times some of the criticism he got was absolutely bonkers, because he wasn't a guy that threw his toys at the pram or anything like that. I just don't think he was a striker that scores many goals, and that's been a kind of pattern throughout his career.
I think his personality, that's why people sort of maybe take a dislike to him as well, because he just looks raging all the time. I don't think he actually likes anyone. When he comes off as a sub, you rarely see him like applauding the fans or anything like that. I know that sounds quite petty, but there will be people who dislike him because of that reason. I know for a fact.
I get where you're coming from, but see, at the same token, like, it's a bit ironic Motherwell fans calling anybody raging.
Nah, I know. We are the most raging fan base ever.
I saw a good tweet yesterday that St Mirren just play to a chorus of boos. Their fans just boo all the time, but the folk around me in these stand are honestly the most negative people ever. I think they actually hate everybody.
I know, I sit in these stand, my season tickets for these stand, and I always want to sit in the middle so I can get the best view possible, but you generally get shouted at for standing up for a goal.
It's very strange. It's the case as well, in terms of we kind of move ends depending on what we were shooting. And it's the same people almost kind of treat you with the same degree of suspicion when you walk down and sit close to them, and then you have to listen to their mundane bullshit for the rest of the game as well. So it's...
I think the contrast is quite funny, because I sometimes do that, move down for a lot towards Cooper for the second half, and that's crazy. You just see guys like sitting on their own, just screaming abuse at teenagers that they've never met before. It's like, what is wrong with
you? It's completely wild. We'll move on and we'll talk about next weekend's game against St Johnstone. I've decided that I'm going to change this format about here, and we'll discuss the Player of the Year nominations, so I can discuss David Turnbull to finish the podcast and finish on a happy note. But St Johnstone game, we've got all the cliches at the road. St Johnstone continue to punch above their weight under Tommy Wright. St Johnstone are always a difficult game. But it is the case that it is always a difficult place to go. They are difficult opposition. Though we did really breeze them aside at Fir Park last month. You're kind of seventh. We've talked about the importance of that from a fan point of view. I think it's about 65 grand to the club. Should be finished rather than eighth. Livingston are all obviously still in the battle as well. They rescued a draw against St Johnstone yesterday. So in that regard, that's all to play for. You're just hoping for not an end of season fixture, which this will be the first time that we've played a side in the bottom six that don't have anything to play for in regards to the relegation battle. So there might be a bit of a different dynamic to the game.
I mean, it sounds like the players are certainly seen finishing seventh as an achievement and something to aim for, because it's mentioned quite a lot in the post-match interviews and stuff like that. So hopefully for your point of view as well, for people going to the game and stuff like that, that it does make it a better game to watch. But I mean, we've sort of had a poor record there. I mean, albeit this season, we managed to get we won 2-1, didn't we, earlier on this season. So a repeat of that would obviously be good. But as I said, for me, it's more about just going and watching Davy Turnbull and Clannad and Amber more than actual going for a battle of seventh place. But it's quite a horrible team to play against, to actually try and play decent football. So we'll see how we go on.
Yeah, it's always a difficult place to go. It's one of my least favourite away games, it must be said. I've got a kind of scheduling conflict with work next Saturday, and I've not really battled that hard to get it off. I'll maybe see later on in the week whether I can work something out, but I must confess I'm not really that arsed at this moment in time.
It's not the best
idioms,
is it?
No, it's not. St Johnstone's just not a very attractive proposition, but fair play to them, because they do. They've made themselves a mainstay in the top flight. They don't pull in very strong crowds. They've not got much of a budget to work with. I would imagine that their budget's very much on a par with ourselves, but they continue to produce results, and they've obviously had a cup win in recent times as well. So I think as a club, they're in pretty good nick. So it'll be a tough game, but hopefully we can grind out something and give ourselves a wee bit of interest going into the final week of the season. We'll talk about the nominations for Player of the Year. David Turnbull and Jake Hastie both nominated for the PFA Young Player of the Year. There's no point even debating whether Turnbull's going to win this, because if he doesn't, I'm actually going to riot at Hampden. There's going to be a protest outside. It's going to be full scale. It's going to be ugly. If anyone else is even under consideration for this award, Nick, there shouldn't be,
but I don't think he's got to win it, honestly. I can't see him winning it.
Have you got that nagging doubt that I have that Lewis Ferguson's going to win this award?
Yeah, well, I make the mistake of listening to Super Scoreboard sometimes, and listen to it, when was it? It was during the week. Was it Mark Guidi that was on? Mark Guidi. I'm actually sure Stephen or Paul McGinn was on for St Mirren as well, and he spoke about it. And Mark Guidi said, "I know without a doubt that Lewis Ferguson's going to win the Young Player of the Year for the Football Writers." And I was like, how is it without a doubt? I was like, there was people phoning up saying it has to be Turnbull. Like, quite a lot of them weren't even Motherwell fans, to be honest with you. I just, the way that Mark Guidi was going on about it, it's ridiculous. I mean, it can't be anyone else. Lewis Ferguson hasn't single-handedly turned Aberdeen's season around, coming into the team a quarter of the way through the season, and he's not the top scoring midfielder in the league. So I don't know how it can be anyone else apart from Turnbull. But Ryan Kent's in the nominations as well. You wouldn't be surprised if he won it over Turnbull as well.
Yeah, you might have to get your token Rangers award in there, because I think it'll be, for me, Callum McGregor's been the best player in Scotland this season. Morelles has had a very good season, but the fact that he's been sent off about a dozen times possibly won't help his cause. I wonder whether Kent would actually edge out Ferguson, in the sense that Ferguson obviously had a terrible tackle in the Scottish Cup semi-final and was subsequently sent off for that. But on the other hand, he scored the winning goal in the Betfred semi-final against Rangers. So I don't dispute that he's not had a good season, but certainly nowhere near the impact that Turnbull has had. And the influence that Turnbull has in our team means that he's a sure thing for me. Fair play to Hasty as well, managing to get nominated in such few appearances. That's
I know you were saying earlier about the now that Hasty's left, always suddenly think he's a bit shite, but I mean, he definitely shouldn't be in the nominations to the Young Player of the Year. That's not me being bitter, but that's absolutely mental. How's that even happened?
Yeah, did you see Rangers tweeting out a congratulations message to him as well?
Was it a picture of him and his mother old trackie as well holding the?
Yeah, if we're going to start throwing accusations about being tin pot about, Rangers have just managed to completely put themselves right in the top of the tin pot league with that. Whoever was tweeting that out clearly had a big smug grin in their face, but they made themselves look absolutely stupid. The thing is, this is one of the things that's really annoying me about the Hasty deal and the whole kind of attitude of, you know what, we'll take whatever we want and we can do whatever we want because we're the establishment club and we're this and we're that, and you're getting just got ideas well above their station for a side that have had their well documented struggles and haven't won anything since then.
I know.
But Rangers are as much of a myth as Scott McKenna is, to be perfectly honest, because the 11 past glories and everything else, they're not that club anymore. Whether FIFA or anybody else claim otherwise is wrong. They're miles off the pace when it comes to Celtic as well. So it's that entitlement really, really scunners me.
It's the only thing that's annoying me is the fact that it's took this long for Celtic to win the league. Because, you know, the media and all that have got to jump on this now, saying that it was a close run thing and all that, because it went all the way down to like the third last game of the season or whatever. Especially if Rangers win next week as well, it'd be like a 6-point gap. It'll almost look as if it was a struggle for Celtic.
Yeah, I suppose Celtic have kind of struggled over the line somewhat, haven't they? But they've, by the same token, they've been by far and away the strongest team in the league. Rangers have been improved this season, but I don't know why we're talking about them that much, to be honest. Let's move this on. Pre-season,
yep.
Continuing a staunch line of discussion and a game at Windsor Park against Linfield. This is an interesting one, and I think I'm finding it very hard to sell to the missus that going to Belfast in July is in any way a good idea. This is something we've done in previous years as well. We've obviously not got any European football to look forward to, so it's a good opportunity for a jolly for the supporters, certainly. We'll obviously have the fixtures announced in the middle of June. The Betfred draw, I believe, is after the week following the season finishing. I think it actually takes place before the Scottish Cup final. So we'll know...
The draw for the
season plan. Sorry?
Is that the draw for the Betfred Cup, did you say, takes place before?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I think that takes place on the Friday. Because you'll have your playoffs as well. I'm sure last year we knew our Betfred opponents shortly after the Scottish Cup, I'm sure it was, but it's soon. Anyway, let's not make it as gospel that it's before the Scottish Cup final, but it's certainly there or thereabouts. We'll know our pre-season plans fairly quickly. We've talked about the fact that the squad's coming together nicely as well. I guess we can start getting optimistic and excited about the season ahead. For now, we've maintained that core of our squad. There's a few doubts, the likes of McHugh, Freer, as already mentioned as well, in terms of futures. But we've got the backbone of the squad already in place. Maybe got to add some finer details, but the the optimism, given the good second half of the season that we've had, is certainly there for me.
Well, that's obviously the benefit of getting these signings done early, because it means they've got to have a full pre-season with the manager, know what sort of style of play he's got to want to implement for next season. If we can keep, hopefully we can keep the core of the squad together. I was looking at the starting lineup yesterday. I mean, can't really think of anyone. I mean, if we can't keep a hold of Aldred, Gallagher coming in is a brilliant replacement for him. But if we can keep the core of the squad together going into next season, playing the same type of football, and obviously having the confidence for the second half of this season, then there's plenty to be optimistic about going into next season for sure.
Yeah, there absolutely is. What's your take on a trip to Windsor Park?
A few of my mates went, was it Crusaders last year?
Yeah.
They get brilliant weather for it, and they said it was really good. So I mean, I'm contemplating it. Just depends on money and stuff like that. But if it was good weather, it's a good wee trip away, isn't it? As you say, we've got no European football, so it's nice to go somewhere out west Scotland to watch Motherwell.
That's it. I went to Larne. Oh, that would be going back maybe 2008, 2009, I think it was. In fact, it would have been before then, because we were in Nancy 2008. So, you're going back. I can remember like Sean Fagan was playing, and we won 2-0, but that was a brilliant trip, and the locals were so friendly, so obsessed about their... So, I certainly think that we've got a warm welcome, putting all the politics and everything else aside. It'll be a worthwhile exercise as well.
It's a good stadium to go to as well, I think. I like looking at that Windsor Park. It's obviously good.
I'll have a tie for Stephen Robinson as well, won't it, with his work with Northern Ireland.
Aye.
So yeah, that's something else to look forward to, and hopefully we can get a few trips to the seaside in the Betfred group stages, and perhaps not make as much of a battle of it as we did this year with the games at Stranraer, and the game against Clyde as well was pretty brutal at points, but we got there in the end.
Is that not the game that Conor Salmon scored, actually?
Yeah, he scored against Queen of the South, I think, and then he also scored against Clyde, and then he's not scored since, has he?
Prolific.
Aye, but he's maybe worth keeping about for the Betfred group stages, and then we'll get shot at him at that point.
Aye, him and Cadden seem to pop up in the Betfred group stages with a few goals each.
Maybe we found his use. Maybe we have actually answered that question that I put earlier on. What is the use for Conor Salmon? Betfred group stages is where he thrives. Either that or ICW. So we've got a few options for Conor. So well done, Nick. That's a productive debut for you in the podcast.
Oh, thanks very much.
You'll be listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Never love me back.
I never noticed that. And now we're just talking, talking anywhere else.